points on an elliptic curve efficiently. At least I claimed that the algorithm was efficient. Now, suppose, so this is going to motivate this hour, that we know more. Suppose that we know the endomorphism ring of our curve. And let's say that I'm working over prime fields. Suppose that we know this. Then I claim it will be much easier to count the number of points of the curve. Because, well, we have to compute the trace, this was called T in my lecture, of the Frobenius morphism. And let's restrict, for simplicity, to the case that the curve is ordinary, which is the most interesting case for ECC anyway. So then we have to compute this. And then if you look inside this ring Z alpha, then we know that this element FP, that belongs to an element of norm P inside Z alpha. And that was yesterday. The green map on the endomorphism ring corresponded to the norm on Z alpha. So we need to look for the trace of an element of norm P inside my favorite ring Z alpha, which was one of these funny rings that was contained in these maximal orders that we had yesterday. Yeah? Oh, remember this? Okay. You can imagine that this is much easier, right? I mean, there are usually only four elements of norm P, and I will explain tomorrow that you can easily find them. That is a very fast algorithm. That's very easy. Which you can imagine, because they have to lie on they have length P, so you can just look inside your order which elements have norm P. It's going to be easy. So this algorithm would be much faster, right? So you just first compute the endomorphism ring, look for elements of norm P, you're done. Okay, there's a slight catch here. Namely, it's very hard to compute the endomorphism ring. Meaning that the best known algorithm has running time that is exponential in log P. But just suppose that we did know it, then it would be easy then to compute the number of points. So what we'll explain tomorrow in the next lecture on CM is that we can make the curve ourselves with a given endomorphism ring. But we know that it's easy to count the number of points if you know the endomorphism ring. Well, then what you just do is say, well, I want to have a curve with this endomorphism ring. Then I can easily count the number of points. You just make the curve yourself to give the endomorphism ring. And for those curves, you can easily count. So what we're going to do is to explain in this hour and tomorrow is how you construct curves with a given endomorphism ring. So I'm telling you I want to have an elliptic curve over some finite field, FP, with endomorphism ring, a maximal order in a number field. Okay. And in order to do that, we're going to start by working with elliptic curves of the complex numbers. Because there we can easily find elliptic curves with given endomorphism rings. Okay. So over the next 30 minutes, we'll talk about elliptic curves over C. And first, define what a lattice is. And to make my life easy, just use what I need. In C, it's a subgroup of C. It's of this form, Z plus Z times tau, where the convention tau lives in the upper half plane, so all the elements in Z with imaginary parts greater than zero. So what does a lattice look like? this is C. I have 1 in there. And I have my tall. And it should be a subgroup. So tall plus 1 is in there. 2. Etc. Yeah? All the points here, the thick points, are the lattice points. Okay. And what is an elliptic curve over C? This is going to be definition. An elliptic curve over C is a torus C mod lambda. Lambda, let's see, a lattice. So I'm going to, it's complex numbers, and I have my lattice inside, and I'm going to take the quotient group. Everyone seen a torus before? No, okay, there we go. So let's visualize what's happening here. I have the complex numbers here, and I'm working model of my lattice, which means that I can identify. Well, these two edges, right? These are the same model of the lattice. They differ lattice point. So if we have C, and now I'm going to fold my note, which is probably very stupid. C over here, we're going to identify two edges. Identified. It's a cylinder. Yeah? And then I also have to identify these, right? Yeah? So then you fold them together. And then I screwed up my note. So in Holland, you would call this a the tire of a bicycle, because in Holland we all use cycles, so in Canada they probably call it a donut, right? It's quite all right, donuts. Okay. Bicycle tires in Dutch, tires in mathematics, donuts in Canadian. Okay. Tori. This is going to be an elliptic curve over C. And now, in fact, all of you should complain. On Monday morning, with the definition of elliptic curve over any field, they were given by Weierstrass equations. Now we're taking one particular field, C, and I say, well, it's a torus. So you should complain. I mean, you have one definition, I have another one. They should be the same, right? Okay, so let's do that. How is this related to Weierstrass equations? Well, it turns out that you can embed the torus as a Weierstrass equation in P2. C mod lambda inside P2 is a Weierstrass equation. Okay, how does that work? Well, I can tell you explicitly what's happening. If I start with my lattice, torus, sorry, C mod lambda, I'm going to make a map to P2. I'm going to take a point Z here. I'm going to map it to some function that I will define shortly. That's the y coordinate that will take the derivative of the function. That's the z coordinate that just take 1. Okay, and what's the function? Actually, it's usually called the Weierstrass P function, but this P is very hard to do on the blackboard, it's Weierstrass P. Have you guys ever tried? So that's why I call it f. Well, this function f should clearly be invariant under the lattice, right? It should be a function on C modulo the lattice. So if I add a point, the lattice to Z, then it should remain the same. So we're just going to make the simplest function you can make that are is invariant under a lattice. And the first observation is that that function needs to have a pole somewhere. Well, actually in the lattice. The reason for that, so this is not yet the complete definition, if it would not have a pole, then it would be holomorphic on this compact quotient, meaning by the theorem of Liouville, if I remember correctly, it would be constant, and constant functions won't work. So it needs to have a pole. You think about it using a contour integration exercise. It needs to have a pole, or at least two. Okay, and it should be invariant under the lattice. Ah. So I should at least make sure that it does. So let's do this one as well. At least it's invariant under the lattice. But now this series does not converge. This is a bit of bad news. So to make it converge, I subtract this one. That's the one. That's how you construct it. So in a way, this is the simplest function, if you want, except for constant functions, that is invariant under the lattice. And miracle, this function works. If you take the derivative here, then the equation, what is it? The equation is given by what? Y squared equals 4 times x cubed minus two functions that I have to define. Three with g 2 of lambda, the function of the lattice, that is 60 times the sum over all omega in the lattice, not 0, 1 over omega to the power of 4, and g 3, there you have 140. You can't read this, but it's the same as here, all the points in the lattice. And now you have to take omega to the power of 6. And this notation, that is what everyone uses, matter of tradition. Okay, so it turns out that if you take f prime of z and you square it, that is equal to 4 times f of z cubed minus g2 times f prime minus g3 of lambda. Okay, so this gives you the Weierstrass equation. So now I related curves here to Weierstrass equations there. So they are the same thing. Okay. Then what? Morphisms. Yeah. Okay. Morphisms between curves. So I explained that yesterday. For Weierstrass equations, they were given by rational functions, these quotients of polynomials. You've seen them this morning with the Schoof lecture. You know, these impressive quotients of psi's. So what are the relevant maps on the side of C modulo lambda? Well, here's the only thing you can think of, basically. Between C mod lambda 1 and C mod lambda 2, that is just an element alpha and C star with the such that, of course, it should make sense, so it should multiply alpha times lambda 1 inside lambda 2. These are morphisms. So morphisms on the side of the C mod lambdas are just elements of C star. So the Weierstrass equation, they were given by rational functions on C mod lambda, just elements of C star. Okay. Now that we know this, other thing we had on the Weierstrass point of view was the J invariant. Weierstrass equation What were that? Y squared equals x cubed plus ax plus b is j of e. Some rational expression here, which I never know. 1728 for a cubed, minus 27b squared. Does that look familiar to Monday? Okay. It's a Weierstrass equation. So now, of course, I can define the J invariant of a curve here by first mapping it into P2 and then taking that definition. One of the exercises, you have to see what you get, what the formula will be. Of course, you also want to do it immediately. Just see what's going on here. I mean, first mapping it into P2 and then using the other definition is a bit silly. You want to do it directly. So, yeah, well, directly between quotes, but I will cheat. Okay, there we go. Question. So this map here, if you want, it's a morphism between compact Lie groups. That's one way to see it. Or you say, well, it's a complex analytic homomorphism, and you see that this is a Riemann surface. So it depends a bit on your point of view. Which point of view do you want to take? Yes, it is. Yes. Yes, very good. I haven't said that yet. Indeed, good point. Every elliptic curve over C, for every Weierstrass equation, so to say, comes from one of these tori. Indeed. Yeah, it is really, yes, very good. It is the same definition, in a way. Every torus corresponds to a Weierstrass equation and vice versa. Yeah? Okay. What do we see? I'm going to remind you that the group SL2Z the upper half plane. So SL2Z, those are 2x2 matrices, coefficients in Z, and determinant 1. And how does a matrix act? Well, if I take a matrix A, B, C, D, this one lives in SL2Z, and Z lives in H, and then I define this to be AZ plus B